On today's episode, we talk to Kate Hardy, a suicidologist and executive director of 6 Feet Over, a nonprofit that helps families, helps individuals deal with suicide preemptively, postemptively, and during. So, Doc, Nick, we are going to have quite the conversation, aren't we?
Absolutely. Trigger warning, we are going to be talking about suicide.
Let's talk about death, baby. Let's talk about grief and mourning.
Psychologist.
Hey, Nick, let's talk about death.
Let's do it.
We're going to talk today about a little bit about 6 Feet Over, but also mostly about suicide. Now, I want to tell the listeners out there, if this is a very triggering conversation, this may be a good time to turn off the episode. But I would challenge you to listen, because there's going to be a lot of good conversation about this, and we need to talk more about this. Kate, before we kind of get started, can you give us a little bit of you, why you got into this, et cetera?
Yeah. So I am a 9-time suicide loss survivor. Lost my mom in 2003 and 8 of my friends since then. The most recent one was in September of 2020, which is actually, I'm at the longest stretch now currently since I was 20 years old, and I'll be 40 in September. So I feel like that's a win. I grew up living with somebody who was chronically suicidal, and I struggle with mental health concerns myself. So a lot of it was just my own personal experiences. And as an adult, I started recognizing the gaps that were there for both suicide loss survivors and for people who were just struggling on all ends of that spectrum, from either living with and loving to having personal mental health experiences and suicidality.
Doc and I have been waiting to do this conversation, and I couldn't ask anybody better to be on this with us to talk about this.
No, you couldn't, because I'm amazing. Yes.
You are quite amazing. I kind of want to discuss for you your first experience. Would that have been your mom? Would that have been the first big experience with suicide? Like, how did that affect you as being not only the daughter, but from somebody who really loved this person? Like, can you kind of get into that a little bit, if you don't mind me encroaching on your emotional state like that?
I mean, I literally built my career around it, so it's not an issue for me talking about it. Growing up with somebody who I loved and had a very complicated relationship with because of their mental health and because of their chronic suicidality, that created part of my personality and how I see, view, and move through the world. My suicide loss at the time, we're looking at 20 years. I'm at 19 and a half right now, but things were a lot different in 2003. Social media hadn't taken off yet. There wasn't a whole lot of messaging in the media when it came to suicide or suicide prevention. It was sparing, like, it was minimal. The term suicide loss survivor, didn't even know that existed. So there were a lot of things that were going on. Also, my experience with my immediate experiences right after my mom died, they gave me a really poor example of what I should be doing or be how I should be behaving and reacting to it.
When you say they, who are you specifically saying? Like, they gave you a bad representation. Who is they?
It was everything from my dad, my direct relatives, my friends that hadn't had an experience with suicide loss before. But I would say almost immediately it was the funeral director who did not send me a really great message. My dad, quote unquote, could not plan or handle any of it. So I ended up planning my mom's service. And the funeral director suggested that we alter her obituary to say that she died from a heart attack and not suicide or sudden death or anything like that might even allude to an intentional death. So that immediately, as a young person, told me that this is not something that you're supposed to talk about.
Yeah, no, and I, you know what's sad, Kate, is I still think we're dealing with that even today. You think with all the strides in mental health, and I'm sure Doc can go even further on this, you think we'd be a lot farther advanced when it comes to how we talk about suicide and how we deal with it. But I find that even still today, most of the people don't know how to talk about it. There's a lot of shame in the situation, and we live in a very religious community. So a lot of the times there are these blanket statements of, well, they're not going to heaven because they committed suicide, or how could they not care about the rest of their family, or we're just going to hide this. And kind of like that funeral director said, we're just going to pretend it's something else.
If you really think about it, right, we as a society don't talk about a lot of things that we should be talking about: death, suicide, sex, drugs, rock and roll, right? Of course, people are going to struggle talking about suicide when they can't even talk about death. You can't even talk about what that experience is like. So then take it even a deeper part of someone who ends up taking their own life. Whoa, right? It's that cringe, right? A lot of people don't know what to say, what to do, how to react. So they go off the knee jerk or what they've been told. Right. And you were right. You nailed it. You know, a lot of the older generation is based off of religion, right? And old, very, very traditional beliefs on things. So that gets handed down to generation to generation to generation. And then, you know, Kate even talked about her experience, this idea, like, even the funeral professional who should be apt to deal with this situation is basically saying, okay, shh, what we're going to do is, we're going to say she had a heart attack, okay?
Oh, he didn't even whisper it. He was just like, you know, I suggest you put heart attack.
I suggest. Let me just pull out one of the three other things we could say here. Let me pull out my book here. Yeah. When I'm uncomfortable about talking about this conversation, what else could we say that death happens? And
talk about stealing your experience there, too.
I mean, a different time. And it took me years to figure out how to talk about it. It took me years to even know that there was a name for what I was. It took me years to realize other people actually said the word suicide, or how to explain it to other people, how to explain my emotional state to other people, knowing that how my grief was undulating, that was actually normal, and that it wasn't unusual to grieve for as long as I was. Like, there were so many things that I didn't know for so long. And I am really happy. Like, I know that there's still funeral directors out there who are, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be a dick on here, but they're bags of shit and they say terrible things to people. But the experience that I've had, especially I want to say over the past 5 years, is that the response that I'm getting now is much more compassionate and informed from funeral, like, directors in general.
Well, and I mean, let's even walk outside of the funeral professional, right? Even the psychology world, right? We still are really up in arms, I guess, because we have not defined, like, we come up with these like blanket statements of like uncomplicated bereavement or prolonged grief, right? But my thing is like, what I don't understand is that we are trying to fit grief into a box. And I don't think we can. I think it's a very subjective experience. So to try to objectify it or to try to put it in numbers, like, well, by, you know, 9 months, if they're still bereaving, then there's something wrong there. Again, we're trying to put grief in this box of clinical depression, and I think they're two different. They're separate.
I think the symptoms kind of line up. Like, complicated grief in general, or complicated bereavement, the symptoms of it are similar, and that's what puts suicide loss survivors at a higher risk of suicide, because those symptoms are so similar. But I think there's a causation involved in it, and that's what makes it different.
Right. I think there is a difference. And I think we as psychologists really need to do a better job of defining that. If we're going to pathologize it, right, then I think we have to do a better job of researching it. I always go back to grief in general. When I was going through school and I was, you know, they want you to take, like, pick your specialty. Like, what do you want to do? And I said, grief. And I had a professor who basically told me it was a joke to do specialize in grief. Because his comment was, everybody knows how to deal with grief. And I literally looked at him and I said, have you lost anybody close to you yet? And he said no. And I said, come back to me when you do.
You see, but that's the perfect problem, right? How can it's easy to judge somebody from the outside of not going through so much of a low of depression that they can't see that person, that is the only thing that gives them relief at that point, right? So for somebody who doesn't have that experience, it's easy to judge and say, well, they're going to hell, or why would they be so selfish to the rest of their family? And I think that's the big problem, is if we can do anything today, it's just open yourself up, your epohe again, Nick, opening yourself up to the idea of put yourself in that person's shoes, like put yourself in a world where that decision is the only thing that's going to bring comfort or
happiness. I think how we start this is by educating people, and this, we talked about this in a previous episode, but it's the idea of people still really don't comprehend what clinical depression is.
Right.
It's not being bummed. It's not being, oh, I'm a little sad
I'm
today.
Having a bad
no, we're
day.
Talking about people that can't get out of bed.
I'm going to go even further and say that I think that it's also a misunderstanding that depression equals suicide, bipolar equals suicide, because that is not always the case. Sometimes people do not have a diagnosable mental health concern. They just don't. And it's just a day that happens and they kill themselves for whatever reason. It could be a buildup of circumstances. Even right now, there are literal task forces that are created to assist people with gambling addictions, because they right now have a high suicide rate. They're one of the highest suicide rates around. So, I mean, I think attaching depression or bipolar or some sort of mental illness, we'll say, to suicide, I think that also is a hint of misinformation, because it cuts out an entire population of people who just end up dying by suicide. And we always want to blame it on something. We want to blame it on an illness. We want to blame it on a situation or something like that. And that's not always the case.
Well, and I think that's the human nature in us, right? Is that we want to pin something on it, because if we can pin, oh, it must be, you know, mental health, it must be bipolar or that kind of stuff. I don't have bipolar, so I'm okay,
yeah,
right? I'm safe here. I'm safe.
Or they lost their house. Like, those could be precipitating events, absolutely. But that does not mean that is why they decided that they were going to kill themselves. You know?
Well, and I think it goes back to what we kind of were talking about, is that we as human beings also try to put things in boxes. So, you know, and don't get me wrong, obviously, as a psychologist, I was trained to what to look for, like hopelessness and isolation and that kind of stuff, right? Those are things that normally do tend to occur normally, right? But the other thing is that we got to be careful with that, because you're absolutely right. It could have just been the perfect storm. Could have just been that day where everything went to hell in a, what's that old saying?
Hell in a handbag?
The hell in a handbag, right?
I think that's what it is.
You know, and the thing is that when we, you're right, when we say that it has to do with depression or mental health, we're discrediting the other situations. And then again, these people are like, well, my mom, you know, my dad, my mom, my wife, my husband, they didn't have any of that. So what went wrong?
Yeah.
You know, and it's, don't get me wrong, this is a very complicated subject. There is a lot, a plethora of questions that I think, unfortunately, will never be answered.
Well, that's the biggest thing, right? They can't, you can't take a survey after. You can't find out exactly their mind frame then and their mind frame after. So the problem is we're just assuming, which we know what assumptions make a lot of the time. Now, I know clinicians are doing the best that they can to try to figure out and try to see try to be proactive instead of reactive to the situation. But right now we're in a very, very much, you know, I'm doing the study with the teenagers right now. And right now there is anxiety, depression, and suicidality is on the rise in high schoolers. And that was my question to you, Kate. I had a couple questions for you. Since your experience with 6 Feet Over, have you learned tactics when talking to somebody who is going through these heavy emotions? Like, what have you kind of picked up as kind of like your best instruments to use out in the field?
Shutting up and listening. It's like step number one. You want to make sure that that person can talk about the things that they're thinking and feeling without being told. Like, you don't gaslight them. You don't actually feel that way. There's, you know, I went through that before and like, I made it, you can do it too. That's all great and whatnot, but that people just want to be heard. Most people feel better once they just tell somebody and you give them permission to tell you by being straightforward and asking. Like, that sounds like you're going through a lot. That sounds like a bunch of crap. That sounds really frustrating, affirming feelings. And then being like, are you thinking about killing yourself? Not harming yourself, because self-harm is different than killing yourself. And then once you open up that door and they have permission to say it, they will just, you know, verbal diarrhea everywhere.
What do you do after that step, Kate? When they, so you,
it depends.
Know,
like,
you have that conversation and
depends on the person. Some people just really feel a weight has been lifted just by expressing that, but then also offering like, okay, well, what can I do to help? And then I tried to stick to the rule of three. So you give three options, and you go from like kind of like the most supportive to the most independent. So I'll be like, you know, would you like for me to call a crisis line with you? Would you like me to sit with you for another hour or overnight, you know, to help you feel safe and we can just like watch a movie? Or, you know, do you want me just to check on you tomorrow and see if, you know, you made an appointment with somebody to talk to? Those are just, I mean, I'm just throwing those out there. But you kind of have to feel the room out a little bit. And all of it really does fall in line with like crisis intervention training. A lot of that really does work.
Really does. I got a question for you, and this might be one that you weren't expecting, but how do you take care of yourself?
So a couple of things. I love that question. One, I am in regular therapy. I go, you know, I do telehealth every other week because I'm a busy lady. So like, I can't really pencil in the drive to go anywhere. So I do virtual with my therapist. She's amazing. I talk through a lot of stuff with her. I have an amazing support system, but I'm also super lucky that most of my friends work in the mental health field. So they already have the skills to be able to deal with me. And then the ones who don't, I rely on them for the other emotional needs that I have, which oftentimes is just joy. Because one of the things that I have realized, especially in the past year, that I'm lacking is that I am the first phone call when somebody is in crisis or somebody that I know knows somebody in crisis, or there's been a death or a suspicious death or a known suicide. I am the first person there, but I am the last person to get invited to a wedding. I mean, there have been people that I've spoken to for 3 or 4 hours on the phone in the middle of the night that I know they're friends of mine. And I've gotten them from a really bad place to being safe, but I'm not invited to the wedding. So I rely on some people just to give me like that joy, that laughter, that good time, that silly. And then I've also trained myself to let things go. You know, like I hear a bunch of bad, I read a lot of terrible traumatic stories that, you know, the people that we work with have gone through. But I've gotten to a point where it literally comes in. I feel it. I get to work and then I let it go. Like it's just gone.
Interesting. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. I think that's an important thing that us mental health professionals don't really talk about too, is self-care and self-compassion and realizing that we can only do our job as best as we're taking care of ourselves.
Yeah.
So when we're not, it affects how we deal with this stuff and cope with this stuff. It's interesting you said you're not invited to weddings, and I'm just curious because Benny and I have always kind of joked about this. It's almost like we're the Grim Reapers walking around. Do you think that's why you don't get invited?
For me, I think people view me as a support versus a friend. Mm. Like they'll say I'm the friend, and I know that they think that they mean that, but ultimately they see me as that really supportive person they know, not as that person who's gonna, you know, start dancing at their wedding.
I want you there when I need you, and then I want you to hide in the background when you're not.
But I don't actually think that people recognize that they're doing it. You know?
They don't. That's, you know, Doc and I have talked about this with me being a funeral director, is a lot of the times I'll leave the funeral home and they'll say, well, I hope I don't see you for a while. and they don't realize like that little comment for them, it's just saying like, I hope nobody dies soon. So I see you again here. But after a while and after generations of funeral directors who that's how they treated them in the community is like, hey, we need you when we need you, but you're kind of a downer for the rest. You know, nobody wants.
I do joke around about it. Like if I am in a group of people that don't know what I do for a living and they ask, and I say, well, I do, you know, suicide postvention and prevention. I'm a suicidologist. Like this is what I do. I'm suicide all the time. And then immediately after, to lighten it a little bit, I go, I'm real fun at parties. And then like, I am so much fun at parties. But
well, and I think you're right. Humor is such an important, I think, role for all of us, especially in this kind of a field. Because like I said, if you're not taking care of yourself, man, you can get caught up in the mud. For sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for sure. Humor is a huge part of the culture within this organization. Like we try to have a good time. And even with staff and interns, like we want to make sure that this is a fun environment because it is so deep and it is so dark sometimes. And you're seeing people and talking to people in their very worst moments or their lowest moments or they're, you know, they're in crisis. So if you don't lighten the mood with just jokes and stuff, I mean, we have a joke in the office. Like, what did you do today in your suicide postvention office? Like,
well, you know, let me pull out my calendar, my schedule.
Everything. Like, you there need you go. To have fun stuff.
Now, for you listeners out there, me Benny here, I have the privilege and honor to be a part of 6 Feet Over. I'm on the executive board, and I've had the opportunity through our program, through Lemonade, to help families. And you're absolutely right. It's an interesting.
Can you pause for a second and explain absolutely. What Lemonade is? Because I don't know if everybody listening to this understands what Lemonade means.
Kate, I'm going to let you take that so you'll say it a lot better than me in a more professional manner.
I am 100% positive of that. Lemonade is our suicide loss support program. So people who have lost someone to suicide. I don't even like to say loved one because sometimes they're very complicated relationships. So they just lose their person to suicide. They are then met with some emotional and resource needs, but also financial needs, specifically for after death costs. So those would be biohazard remediation, funerals, the things that go along with funerals, all of those little fun accessories like coffins. And headstones and
you mean caskets, right?
Whatever.
I like coffins or pinch toes.
I love that. You're telling me it's not popular?
So I'm gonna pause you again for the listeners out there that have no idea what you meant by the biohazard I don't know exactly the terms you said. Yeah, can you actually explain what you're talking about there?
Yeah, because especially that's very important. People don't think about that. No. That's a part of this. So go a little bit into that.
So occasionally, when people die, either the death itself may have caused a mess, or if somebody was not found for a while, it could also cause a bit of a mess. And the last thing that somebody should have to do on their own or feel like they have to do on their own is clean up a hazardous situation that is also going to be traumatic. There are professionals out there. We work with a really great company who does the majority of the state of Michigan, who gives us a really nice little baby discount to make sure that we can afford to help everybody that we can. And that's the Michigan Crime Scene Cleaners. They're great guys.
Well, it's important because the problem is for most people, obviously, when they're dealing with something like this, they haven't been talked about. This hasn't been a discussion they've ever had. So they just assume they have to take care of that. I'm sure it's a very lonely, isolated situation for them. So it's nice to know that there is this organization that's out there. And I think it's incredible because I think that's the biggest problem about suicide is there's so many facets to it. There's so many unanswered questions for the grief side of it. There's so many people that it touches, you know, that people don't think, oh, it's just the main family. No. You know, we're talking whole societies really that are involved. And, you know, that's the interesting thing that I've learned in my 10 years as a funeral professional now is everybody somewhere in their life has had somebody that either they known or they've in their family, you know what I mean? Suicide isn't that like, well, that happened to one in a million. That's not how it happens. Usually you could talk to one person. They'd be like, yeah, I we have a family member or no, I lost my friend, or I had somebody in college that I was really worried about. And that's the thing. Like, it's not just we need to be more proactive than reactive, because the problem is it's already happening. It's already a part of who we are, and why wouldn't we have these discussions, and why not have, and that's, I guess that was one of my questions I have, Kate, because I'm kind of going in circles here. For somebody who isn't in any of this mental health field, whether it be funeral directing, psychology, or you specifically that does a day-to-day, does their homework on suicidality and all that, what would be something to help them maybe when they see something, or maybe they hear something, because you hear that a lot, right? I wish I would have said something, or, you know, my friend said this and I didn't know what to say and I wish I could have gone back, right? You have all those should haves. I should have been there. I should have known to go to their house at 2 a.m. Like, what's things that maybe we can give the outsiders, not necessarily, you know, the people that are dealing with suicide internally, but the people on the outsides that may not, but seeing some of this stuff, what's some good advice we can give them?
Like, their person is alive, is what you're saying.
Correct. And maybe they said something in passing, joking, you know, you hear that all the time, right? They said they were going to shoot themselves and then they laughed. And I could tell that there was more seriousness to that than actually the joking. What can we do as clinicians or people who at least are knowledgeable in this to help them?
Okay. Just for clarification, to help the people who want to be a support.
Correct.
Be a support.
Correct.
Okay. So I just encourage people to have the really uncomfortable situation or the uncomfortable conversations. You know, they're hard to start. And I understand that, but if the situation doesn't feel right at that moment to bring it up, you can always circle back. So if you are out at, like, let's say a bar and somebody is like, I should just kill myself. Ha ha ha. And it kind of gave you a really uneasy feeling. Like, that was not a joke. That was normal. That was not somebody just playing around. And you even have the slightest tinge of concern, you can always just text them. Are you busy? No. Okay. Give them a call. Be like, hey, you said this thing at the bar, kind of got me a little concerned. I care about you. And I want you to know, like, if you're feeling some sort of way and you kind of feel like death is an option for you right now, you can totally tell me and I will listen to all the things that are going on. You know, you can read the room. Like, there's different people that respond different ways. Like, if my brother is feeling real down because he has SAD, seasonal affective disorder, I can just be like, you fucking all right? You know, like, I can say that to him. Like, are you looking for an out? Then there's other people that I have to change what I say to them to make sure that it's appropriate for them, where it's more like, I know you've been going through a lot right now and you deserve support and you deserve the opportunity to talk about that and anything else that is going on with you. So what's going on? And are you thinking about killing yourself? Because that's kind of the feeling that I'm getting. And then opening that door for them. And they're uncomfortable conversations because we have this fear of insulting people. The worst that can happen is that they go, no, I'm just having a bad time. And then if they do end up dying by suicide, you will know you did everything you could. You did everything that was available to you at that time with the knowledge that you had. You know, very few of us are psychics.
No, and that's perfect. And if any listener out there, like, go back that 10 seconds and listen to what Kate just said, because it's so important. because there's a lot of people that have done everything that they could and still blame themselves because they could have, they think they could do more. And that's the biggest problem is there wasn't anything you could do. You were given only the knowledge you were given and you did the best that you could. But yeah, it's such a, like I said, there's so many unanswered questions, and Kate, I really appreciate you coming on and having this conversation with Doc and I. It's been absolutely incredible. Now, people out there who want to learn more about 6 feet over, or if they want to have discussions with you on this, how do they get a hold of you? How do they reach you?
Well, I would say the best way to reach me directly would be to email me, which is katie@sixfeetover.org. So KATIE @SIXFTOVER.org. But we have staff that is also very qualified and also kind of like our people, our jam. We have a certain culture here where it's just very real and knowledgeable. So that would be the best way. I might refer you to a staff person just because they might be better at handling whatever it is that you're asking. If you're looking for resources for yourself or somebody you know, I would refer you to Sam, and that would be sam@sixfeetover.org. So I'm available. We want to help people. And if people are loss survivors and they just need a little extra support, we can help with that too. We do emotional and resource support. It's not always just, financial jazz. Like, we want everybody to have what they deserve, and they deserve to have an opportunity to talk about their experience, their person, what they're going through, and get help looking for the additional stuff too.
Oh, well, it's absolutely wonderful what you're doing. I could tell you from my experience with you that I've learned a lot of how to communicate with people, and especially my families that I deal with when conversations like this arise, because sometimes there's a lot of silly things said that need to be shut down at times in a professional manner. And other times they're just, like you said, is just open your ears and let them communicate their story, because at the end of the day, that's what they want. They want somebody who's going to listen, is not going to judge, and is not going to gaslight them, as you said. So really appreciate the conversation tonight. I'm sure there will be a part two to this eventually, Kate. So thank you for being on, Kate. You're an absolute wonder. And Doc, do you have any thoughts, closing remarks before we close this one up?
I just want to say that you're a blessing to the people that you work for.
Oh, thanks, man.
Keep fighting the good fight, because we need more of you. That's for sure.
And you have glorious blue hair right now, so thank you for that.
It's blue green. It's turquoise.
Cotton candy blue is what I said earlier. It's exactly what it is.
It's blue green.
Well, I spoke at school yesterday, and everybody told me I looked like a teal Miss Frizzle. So whatever.
Ooh, I like that.
That's a win.
And with that, we will end this conversation. For all of you out there, if you haven't, please like, subscribe, send us out there. If you have any questions for us, maybe on more about suicide thoughts or how to get a hold of Kate, you can always reach us too at letstalkaboutdeathpod@gmail.com. Like us on all your platforms, send us out there. And if somebody is dealing with suicide, or maybe that family is dealing with suicide, please send this episode out. They could be getting something from it, or at least somebody to reach out. Thank you. This was a very hard conversation today. I appreciate Kate being on and Doc going through this journey with us. And like always, if you're not talking about death,
you're not living. Thank you so much.